Hey, America.
Start listening now.
Oh, gosh, you guys. It's that historic day of June 15th, 2026. And I just bet everything I will ever own on Spain's sound defeat of Cape Verde. Now I'm just going to take a big sip of tea and take a look at how the game went. Oh, God. And welcome to another scoreless episode of 12 Points from America, the world's Eurovision podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Liz.
All right.
I love World Cup time. I mean, I genuinely do. I'm slightly envious that, Minneapolis is not, even though we've got a great venue, we're not one of the host cities. It is what it is.
No one wants to be here. Except all the cool people who are here, such as myself and Derek, and probably some others. I just see some oaf put $1 million on Spain to win.
Just outright, the whole damn thing?
No, today.
Oh, today?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, bless his little heart.
He stood in line to, if they just won, which they didn't, it was a draw. He would have used his $1 million to win about $80,000. Instead, he lost $1 million.
How does that even work? Like
the odds were
not a 1-to-1.
No, because Spain was so favored
that
it wouldn't have been 2-to-1 odds. So yeah.
You had to bid that much to win $80,000 because of how much of a favorite they were, basically, and then they just didn't. It's great. You can tell in the highlights the moment where Spain is like, okay, this isn't funny anymore. we need to they had to put Lamine Yamal in, even though they were going to sit him because they thought they didn't need him to beat Cabo Verde. And so they brought him in. It still didn't work. And it's funny. It's great. Shout out to Curaçao also.
Yes, seriously.
For scoring a goal.
Yeah.
A goal.
Yeah.
I've never seen a 7-1 score line feel so heartwarming.
That's right.
I have. And I was rooting against Brazil that one time.
Oh.
Anyway, congratulations, Curaçao and Brazil. You're the two countries that have lost 7-1 to Germany. Anyway, soccer podcast. Let's talk about Eurovision stuff. And we're going to start by talking about the most important Eurovision related people in the world, which is our patrons. Sam? Woo!
Yeah. You can support us with a monthly sustained donation over on our Patreon account. Whether you support us financially or not, we love you either way. Patreon supporters do get exclusive content, early access to episodes, and shout outs when you either join, rejoin, change your monthly donation. So we want to give a massive shout out to folks that we haven't had the chance to in a couple of weeks. Mustafa Tekman, Derek KJ, as opposed to that's a different Derek than the Derek that's actually on our podcast, but you're cool too, Derek KJ.
As far as we know.
Bobby Dallas and Emma Kirst. Bobby Dallas, I think you've joined with us before, but hello again. Hi. We're happy to have you. And if you're not on our Patreon, that's okay too. You can follow us on social media. That we're on basically everything at 12 Points USA. Just email us directly at 12pointsofamerica@gmail.com if you'd like to reach out to us. We're always happy to see your messages. It's nice to know that somebody's out there listening to us, especially during the kind of quiet off season. We're all, some people call this PED, post-Eurovision depression. I try not to think of it that way. There's too much in this world to get depressed about. So this is just pre-Eurovision 2027 joy I'm trying to hold on to.
Yeah.
Or pre-Jesk. Or post-Eurovision young musicians. I think we could talk about that.
Pre-Eurovision Asia, too.
Yes. Yeah. It's just... it's only a couple of months until Panarctic Vision comes back around again. There's always something going on.
There's so many visions now. It's great.
Vision all over the place. Just eyes everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
The Panopticon is watching.
Yay.
The Eurovision Panopticon.
Yeah.
But you did mention young musicians, Sam.
Yes, we did. And that just happened this past weekend over in Yerevan, Armenia. And we have a winner.
That's good.
Yeah, Poland's Michał Stochel on the accordion.
Hell
yeah. Yeah, this is the first
real instrument.
Well, tell that to Michał, I guess.
I'll find him.
Hey, Michał.
Come on the show. We need to talk. That would be we just want to talk.
Anyway, yeah, so it's a congratulations to Poland. This is their fourth win at a Eurovision Young Musicians event, as well as the first win ever for an accordion player. Good on them.
At Ooh-hoo. Anything.
At anything. I don't know. Weird Al.
It's Weird Al and this guy.
Yeah, Weird Al wins at life. Yeah. Like, I think we can all agree that Weird Al is a global treasure. Yeah?
Agreed. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
Oh, come on.
Oh, God.
Just being a contrarian.
Okay, so that's you.
First you hated Felicia and now Weird Al.
Bye, Felicia.
Don't worry. There's more of that coming, I think. Yeah, congrats to them. To Poland.
Yeah, and we also have, rounding out the podium, we have Sonia Misinia from Latvia placed second with a marimba performance. I think
yes.
One of two marimbas that were in the competition. This is the first time we've had any marimba at Eurovision Wait, Young Musicians.
There were two?
I believe there were two.
Huh.
Yeah. It's like when your bus is not running on schedule, like it just never comes, and then suddenly two come one right after the other.
Oh, that happened to us in D.C. when we were
a
there.
A number of times.
Yeah. That's the only way they function.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
And coming in third place, hometown hero, Ellen Virabian, representing Armenia, on the flute, placed third. So very, very, very nice there. But yeah, awesome. this is obviously a very, very different vibe to the regular contest, but lovely in its own way. So, yeah, this is pleasant. Pleasant plus, even.
Oh, that's great. It's always good.
Yeah. But there was quite a lot of diversity. Let's see. There was accordion, clarinet, flute, two marimbas, three piano performances. It looks like three violin performances as well. So
piano and violin historically dominate this thing. But we've started to get, much like in the real contest, some musical diversity that has just made things better. Are we united by music now?
And at least united by classical music.
Okay. That's a start.
Yeah.
It's a start.
Move in the right direction.
Take it where you can. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Just checking.
You're united by marimba.
You love to see it.
Love a marimba. Let's see. The other Eurovision contest for youngins is beginning to populate as well. We'll obviously go into a lot more depth with our junior Eurovision coverage as we get closer to the event this fall. We know that it's going to be in Malta. But we have our first song, Albania, with Eslin Kurtis with Kerçeme Mua, has been selected to represent the country. Interestingly enough, on the list of writers is Eriana Rushtiti, who also wrote Duye and Kateotokis for the big contest. And for Junior Eurovision was on the writing team of Valsoy and Botaime. So quite a few really well-liked songs over the years. Other names that have been selected, songs to be determined, but Ranina, the junior selection in Georgia, has wrapped up with David Lomidze taking the win over in Georgia. Victor Sass winning for Poland, and the winner of The Voice Kids in Portugal is Salvador Riu, so he'll be representing the country in fall. So yeah, so far it's a male-heavy year, but it's early yet.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Dudes rock.
Boys night!
Boys night! That is a reference that three people will get, but those three people are awesome.
I mean, it still works even if you don't get the reference.
That is Hello from the Magic Tavern, another well-loved podcast, at least by Derek and myself. I need to
catch
up on
that. Is an old episode, too.
It's old. It's early on. But
is that still going?
I think
so. I haven't listened in a while.
Yeah, same.
I'll have to look into that.
I have to look this up now. Hello from the Magic Tavern. The Magical Land of Foon. Let's see. The
they
podcast
should be paying
episodes.
Us for this.
They should. Yeah, you know what? Yeah. It looks like they've been
nice.
They've been there was a season finale came up on May 17th of this year, and it looks like they're doing some Patreon stuff. But cool. Yeah, it's still going.
All right. Podcast.
Episode come out today.
On their Patreon, yes. So yes, you're looking for if you're looking for a podcast, how do we describe this one? A comedic podcast about a man who falls through a portal behind a Burger King in, I believe, Illinois, and finds himself in the magical land of Foon, where he becomes best friends with a shape-shifting badger and a very vociferous wizard, and they meet crazy friends along the way. So
let's describe it as if you're into D&D and improv, that's basically what it is.
Yes.
There's a non-significant overlap between those two circles in the Venn diagram.
Yeah, they're basically stacked.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes.
Nerds.
Yeah.
Oh man. Okay.
I have no shame. Anyway, and other news. Yeah, the EBU finally released their viewing figures.
One of those from the chat. Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. The numbers that they're looking at seem like a drop of approximately 30 million over last year, which is significantly more than the audience of the nations that were not participating this year. Hemorrhage might be the word we're looking for.
Oh, you love a good hemorrhage. I mean,
they do not.
No, you're right. You don't.
I
wonder a tiny bit if the international availability on YouTube caused this to take, it would explain at least some of the hit. Obviously, I don't think that's the main thing.
No.
But they should be counting those numbers, are they not?
Oh, I mean, I figured those were just TV numbers, but maybe not. I don't know. If they do, then yeah, that's brutal. Yeah.
There were a couple of nations where the numbers did increase, you know, among countries where either they hadn't qualified in a while or there was considered the favorites. And you know, there was a bump in Finland, Australia, Denmark, Norway, but definitely a bit of a dip in quite a few others. So we will see what happens over the next year. I'm sure this is going to be a point of discussion during the next EBU sort of general grand's poobah meetings that are coming up, I believe, next month. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see.
These are the sort of numbers that I think, I mean, they talk. They it's hard data that people can act on. And yeah. So I'm curious to see how that's going to change the vibe of the discussions. You know, the ones.
There are many. There are many, many.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of the things that they changed for this year worked out okay. But
there are a lot more changes that need to be made.
Yeah.
In terms of voting and structure and all of that. You know, how do numbers like these affect sponsorships?
Mm-hmm.
You know, exactly. Who knows? It's going to be a long couple of months, I think. And we'll talk about those as we get more information and more news. So
I wonder if they're going to talk about giving each year its own slogan back.
That's going to be the difference. Yeah, that's.
I just look. I think Eurovision 2027, Sofia, Bulgaria, welcome to the riot, is something they'd only somewhat regret.
Ooh, only somewhat.
It, you know, the thing, if you know the context, it's great.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't, or you know the other context that Eurovision's been talked about in recently, maybe not as much, but.
How about Eurovision 2027, Sofia? I'm a psycho for no reason.
Yeah, that sounds good.
That's a little too on the nose.
Eurovision 2027. Choke me. Why did we pick that one? I don't know.
Eurovision 27. Your head, your heart.
Your body parts.
Yeah. Woohoo. And that brings us to today's topic, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
which
yes,
is my
I
guess. Body parts.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah. They're mostly okay. Some of them are not. Thanks, everyone. We'll see
Good
you
talk.
Next week.
Good talk.
Now, a thing that we had kind of noted as a potential post 2026 discussion was it. I think really one of the more noteworthy results of the year was Sweden finishing in 20th place. Now, granted, the song and performance had some issues, as has been discussed on this show
at great length.
Yeah, quite a bit, but still. I feel like there was still some belief that's like, okay, but it's Sweden. It's still gonna do some numbers, but it didn't. In fact, had we used last year's televote only format for semifinal voting, it wouldn't have made the final at all. And that's wild.
That's crazy.
It got fewer points than San Marino in the televote. It got fewer points than Vanilla Ninja in the televote in the semifinal. Montenegro. I mean, it was 13th in the televote. And so I guess my question is just, and I'm a defender of this song, but I'm putting that aside, honestly, for this. This is a more analytical question. What happened?
Mm.
And is this an indicator? And we've had other indicators as well. Benjamin Ingrosso comes to mind in whatever year that was. 2018,
I believe.
18. Yeah, Lisbon.
Okay. Man, what a year. Yeah. Is this sort of thing, the perfectly polished surgically precise Swedish entry. Is it done? Is it, has it lost its luster? What's going on with this? And obviously, it's weird to ask, is Sweden done? Because here are some numbers I found on this. In 2010, they didn't qualify. I think it was 2010.
The year before, I started going, yes. Yeah.
Since then, they've finished outside of the top 10 as many times as they've won the contest. Three apiece. In that span, my system is the worst result they've gotten by a pretty good margin. So what happened?
I mean, how much of it do you chalk up to the Swedish system of the hyper polish, and how much do you chalk up to the individual song itself? And the song, while, you know, certainly danceable and catchy, had its detractors.
It's all because of Derek and Danny.
Well, that's two of the detractors. But I mean, people could argue that there wasn't a connection because you couldn't see her singing. It just, you know, wasn't a, it was a instrumental song with a little bit of a vocal break rather than a vocal song with strong instruments to back it up. It could also just be there were other stronger, upbeat, female-led songs in the show. I mean, we look at who won. You know, Bangaranga could have easily have siphoned votes off of my system when it came to the upbeat, danceable, very engaging female-led song. You can argue Romania may have done the same. You know, Alicia had vocals that were stomping all over literally anybody and everything. It could have very well just have been that things got siphoned away from her. But I don't disagree with you in the fact that maybe people are kind of catching wise to you need substance as well as style. Bulgaria had both. Romania had both.
Yeah.
And I feel like Sweden had a lot more of one than the other.
I don't want to discount another possibility, and that's that rave songs don't tend to do well at this contest at all. And we've seen a few instances where,
We Will Rave.
Red Sebastian.
Yeah. I mean, but
We Will Rave did qualify, but ended up near the bottom.
Yeah.
Red Sebastian, I thought that was an easy qualifier because I thought he nailed it and it looked really good. And
yeah.
People just weren't on board for that. I'm also remembering, was it Latvia? Was it like Trina Park or?
Oh, Line, Triana Park. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a cool song.
That was great.
That was a great song. Came last in their semi.
Oh, break my heart.
Because I looked that one up and I was like, how did they do again? Oh, not well at all.
Horrible. Cool.
That was a fun song.
That was a great one.
At least in this specific case, I think this was not the right kind of song. Just generally, I don't think this does well for most entrants. And you kind of add these other things on top of it that were kind of going against her. She wasn't at her best, which I think really hurt her in every voting block, jury and televote in both the final, grand final and the semifinals, as well as, you know, maybe some other weirdness, random fluke. I guess the initial question you're kind of asking is like, are they on the way out or are they going to have to do a kind of rebrand at some point? Because this system that they've relied on for decades at this point isn't working as well as it used to. I think even if they do need to do a rebrand, it's going to be a while before they ever kind of do it.
I mean, do you think they'd have to like have a non-cue with a song like this for them to really like wake up and be like, okay, I think they need
multiple.
Multiple. Huh.
I think any country, I'm speaking broadly, if a country sent a song and it did not do well, like a rock song or whatever, and it didn't do well, I don't think they'd say, we can never send another rock song again. I think they'd say, well, that was just a fluke. It was just that band or that performance or that staging. We could try again later and see what happens. I think if their system seems to be
their
relatable. Yes, I know. Their formula is very much highly polished, well-staged, not overly complicated staging. You know, bright, charismatic performance, typically. The themes are very relatable, if a bit simple. Very often, I'd say like 70-80% of the time, they're breakup songs, which have a universality, I'll admit. Is there going to be a time when someone's like, I'm ready for something else. I'm ready for something different. I don't think it would take a lot of work for them to shift, but they might be so set in their ways that it'd be hard.
Well, and what does that say about, I mean, Melfest is an institution in and of itself that's selecting these songs to send. How does that reflect back on what Sweden, I guess, capital S trademark, is into it thinks will do well, or is that just a product of that process?
That's a really good question, because my brain was going into Sweden picks a song for Sweden, and that happens to be, you know, a taste that the Swedish voters are going for. It's they're not necessarily picking the song for Eurovision. They're picking, this is the song that I like. This is the song that's going to end up being the, you know, the probably the song of the summer. And yet also you have this other, you know, the juries that go into it thinking what's going to be a great Eurovision song, which is weird considering you would expect the juries to really kind of have their fingers on the pulse of what a Eurovision fan would like, but that's not necessarily what the voters as a whole would be voting for, the international voting public. So you have these three sort of different points of view. You have the Swedish domestic audience voting for the songs that they like. And also keep in mind that Felicia, or as Flöken Snusk previously, is a known entity.
Gesundheit, by the way.
Thank you. It's allergy season.
Pronunciation, though.
Faksimika. I'm sure I'll get an email from Talbe from Aftonbladet.
You can't say that. This is a family show.
I know. but you have the Swedish domestic audience wanting one thing, which might line up with what the Eurovision experts that are on these juries may think the Eurovision fans are going to want. And then you have the Eurovision voters and the actual Eurovision juries wanting something completely different. So how do you get that all in line? And is the issue with the show itself, or is it with the song selection? Do you have to go a little bit deeper? So it's, how do you pivot? And who do you, and really who do you play question. To for Melfest? Who do you play to?
Well, let me get some context on this one, because I remember you mentioning this before. Melfest has higher viewing numbers in Sweden than Eurovision does.
Yeah, it's basically the second highest viewed television show in Sweden every year, only after Donald Duck's Christmas special.
Friend of the show.
Kalle Anka. I love. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm sort of curious, do we know how many more people watch Melfest in Sweden than Eurovision? Because I'd be curious.
23.
But I'd be curious if it's like a significant number. If we're talking like over a million people or something, that's a lot of people who are only watching Melfest and maybe voting in Melfest and picking these songs. And then what happens to it after that, it's not their problem.
I will note that at least in the case of this year, my system did win both votes relatively comfortably. Mm. Like there was a consensus that this was the song to send this year. And I mean, this year's lineup wasn't as stacked as Melfest can be historically. Mm. I really love 2017 Melfest as sort of the gold standard for that. But Half of Me by Greg Zula, which finished second, I think second or third in both votes.
Yeah.
I think would have been an interesting choice. Hard to know that it would have done better than Felicia did, I guess, but I don't know. I mean, if that's the case, that the primary concern is Melfest versus Eurovision, if it becomes a trend that what Sweden sends that has historically been so popular is suddenly not very popular, is SVT going to care? Or are they going to be fine with Swedening and not adapting and not trying to get to that eighth win that I imagine they want pretty badly? But I don't know.
It feels like such a point of pride for them that they would.
And that they would care.
Like we can't have this conversation without talking about the song from last year, which was completely different than anything they've ever sent.
And a massive favorite.
A massive favorite, despite that. So, you know, these questions of can they pivot? Will they pivot? I mean, they absolutely can. They've demonstrated that. I would say if last year hadn't happened, if they sent another kind of pop song from last year, I would say, well, highly unlikely. They seem to be set in their ways. But now I'm like, they could switch it up easily. And they have other genres in Melfest that they could easily do. They've sent rock songs and hip hop and, you know, comedy stuff as well. Yeah. Like, I think it'd be easy for them to pivot if they wanted to.
And they've kind of dabbled in other, maybe not necessarily completely different other genres. We haven't had like a massive rock song from them in a couple, in quite a while, I think. But my brain goes to Hold Me Closer, which, while incredibly well done, had a lot more grit and a lot less hyper polish than we see from a lot of other performances, and also not from a super, super well-known singer. So there is a behavior in the past of a little bit of pivot, but it just, it's not quite as risk-taking and eye-catching to an international actual voting Eurovision audience as I think they'd hope.
With Bara Bada Bastu, in my head, I remember it just like flopping. But that's not really true. It didn't win like the odds were quite confident of. all of that is kind of out the window now. We're learning more things, obviously. But it finished fourth overall. It was third in the televote, which is by many standards very good. But I don't think I'm the only one that thinks of it as having flopped a bit, underperformed.
Well, we're also considering one, we all underestimated Espresso Macchiato, and two, yes. I don't think we really saw the Israeli public vote being what it was, which I think also changes the conversation a little bit in terms of how a public vote really kind of shakes out.
Well, like it had fewer points than 2024, the Israeli song in the televote. I mean, I don't know that I would call it surprising exactly.
No, I'm not saying was surprised by the Israeli score that year, just that it changes the landscape of how the other points really kind of shake out, whether it's truly organic or not.
Between that and Tommy Cash,
no
song got 300 points that year. It was just kind of spread out a lot generally.
Well, you know, that's an interesting contrast to make between Bada Bada Boss 2 and Espresso Macchiato, because I think there are some parallels to be drawn there between, a song that's maybe a little more goofy, but goofy in the way for Espresso Macchiato is just kind of unhinged. Whereas I think looking at Bada Bada Boss 2 is more Swedish than I think a lot of people give it credit for, because it is still a very polished Swedish pop song. It's just in a different language and it's kind of funny. So it
has some of the same songwriters as the Swedish core group or whatever you want to call it.
So, those maybe pull from one another in terms of voting block. I don't know.
So if Estonia picks like Minimal Wind instead of Tommy Cash, does Sweden just crush it last year? I guess I don't know.
It's one of those what ifs, alongside, who would have won Eurovision 2020,
Montaigne, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, absolutely no. Not.
Okay. I guess overall, I don't want to say I'm worried about Sweden, because like they'll probably be mostly fine. But if the status quo of the contest is changing and you need something that's a little more high art, like a Nemo, like a Bangaranga, that sort of thing.
It's crazy that we're considering Bangaranga as high art, but
it is. Damn it.
Visually,
I mean, the staging, absolutely.
It doesn't win without that staging.
No,
no, it doesn't even come close.
I mean, we all kind of, I fully admit when I'm wrong. I had it down as a potential NQ, and then we saw the staging, and I can put my big girl pants on and say that I'm wrong. I was wrong.
Yeah.
And I need to go. Pants.
I didn't have time to do it for this episode, but I at some point, maybe we'll include this as part of our 300th episode spectacular, which will be two episodes from now.
Oh, what?
Yeah. I want to go back and just take note of every comment that we got in like the pre-show, like give us your rankings votes, give us your funny, silly comments. I want to grab all the ones for Bangaranga and just see, because no one saw it coming. Not even our incredible, perfect, and attractive listeners saw this coming.
I think so. Here's where I find maybe I'm not going to call it the Bangaranga effect exactly, but if we think about how what happens at Melfest translates onto a Eurovision stage, what happens at like UMK that transfers to a Eurovision stage, where you get basically exactly what you saw at a national final, almost a direct parallel, subtract a guy from Kai or a dancer, you've got some slightly different camera shots from on Linkaitin. But what effect, I guess, thinking about the changes that are made between the run-up from the national final to the Eurovision stage, does a song like Bangaranga, obviously we had big changes from the national final to the music video to the Eurovision stage there for the better. We saw very minimal changes for My System from Melfest to the stage. We saw very minimal changes from Finland for Linkaitin, from UMK to the stage. What effect does that have when you're seeing the same thing for 2 or 3 months leading into the contest? That is what lands on your stage. Whereas you, with Bulgaria, we saw something totally different on the stage than we had ever seen before. And in a world where we were living on viral videos and TikToks and YouTubes, and we're seeing very instantly what's coming out, is there a level of fatigue with our countries like Sweden and Finland by the time you get to the contest if they're just putting the same thing on the stage?
I mean, maybe amongst the fandom, but again, I mean, I'd be really, really interested to see this is going to take a massive undertaking by the EBU or a broadcaster. What percentage of Eurovision voters are hearing and seeing these songs for the first time? And what percentage did their research on what these songs are going to be? I think, you know, if the average number of people who are watching Eurovision blind or listening to it blind, if that number is low, then people could be fatigued. But if people are seeing it with fresh eyes, then new is new and everything is new. So is it better to polish the hell out of your performance early and just get it absolutely clockwork routine perfect, which you do kind of risk losing some of the heart by making it too clinical? Or do you jazz it up? Do you throw everything you got at it? Do you change things? Do you upgrade? And is there a risk in that by either a newer performance, or you don't necessarily have an audience like us crazy superfans saying, oh, that's a little bit too much?
But your juries certainly aren't outside of that bubble.
Some are. I mean, there are absolutely Eurovision like insiders who've, you know, done the performance, who are songwriters, who are this and that. Absolutely. But there are also people who are just, I'm a radio broadcaster on a local station, or, you know, it's a really big breadth and depth of experience, especially now that we have these younger jurors that are taking part. You know, I'd be very, very interested to see a full-on deep dive into who are Eurovision voters truly and what do they respond to.
Yeah. To Liz's point, I think that goes both ways, though. Like, I mean, and the fandom is what's going to drive a lot of the social media hype around a song, either during Eurovision week or otherwise. But if the majority of viewers are seeing, let's say, My System for the first time, those people are also seeing Bhanga Ranga for the first time. So they don't have the context of this staging glow up that we've been so high on. This is all it's ever been, as far as they know. They're just not thinking about it in those terms. But if I try to put myself in the shoes of someone who is seeing those two songs for the first time, I know which one would seem more interesting. And more, you know, more innovative. Or Bhanga Ranga is totally crazy and super well performed. Sweden's, it looks cool, but the vocals aren't as there.
It doesn't make you feel anything.
And I mean, that's Sweden, all right. You can see it from a mile away. And I guess to bring it full circle, I guess it'll take more time to know for sure, but it seems like perhaps that's becoming an issue for them.
I think it's going to be interesting because in this experiment, this grand experiment of what people want, we have one artist once a year and that's it. We can't do multiple musical styles, different artists, different stagings, and just see what works year after year. They're going to have to go into next year and be like, okay, are we going to try the same formula again? Or are we going to just completely throw that out and start over? And I feel like a lot of countries throw it out and start over every single year. And sometimes it works great and sometimes it doesn't.
I mean, we saw this. I'm sorry. Go on.
Go ahead.
Go on.
Oh, just really quick. I'll also say I don't think one of the biggest problems with pop culture media and entertainment is sometimes people don't know what they want until they get it. Like Amar Polo situation. Nobody knew that they were fans of Portugal until they were.
And they all were.
I'm just kind of reflecting on the three countries that came back this year after, you know, an absence of as little as 1 year or as much as, you know, three or four. You come back, you retool, you shake the dust off of your selections, and you break the sense of inertia. And Bulgaria, Romania, and Moldova all did that. And I'm not saying completely restructure Melfest. I'm not saying, because it's a beloved institution. I would never say screw with San Remo or Festival de Cungas. It's its own beast. It's not just a national final. But sometimes you just have to grab a thing by the shoulders and shake it up and see what kind of loose change falls out of the pockets.
And those three countries, first, third, and eighth, yeah, by the way, and deservedly so. Mm-hmm. They were all among the absolute highlights of the year. And that's awesome. Yep. It's great that it feels like a case of the everyone's on equal footing actually happening and working, that us, you know, a country like Romania or Bulgaria can go toe to toe with Sweden and have people say, you know what, those are better than what Sweden is doing. And if that's the case, I hope Sweden is taking note, I guess is what I'm saying. We're at a point now where you have to innovate. You can't just be really good. The bar is just so much higher now.
I mean, being really good does help, but
I mean, yes, it does need to be really good.
And it needs to innovate.
Yes.
Or you have to be a 50-year-old Italian man.
With just charisma,
the rules simply do not apply.
Just charisma oozing off of you.
Oh, yes.
Puddle of ooze.
There's a whole separate conversation we could have about Italy and how they somehow manage to come top five every year.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. It's magic. That's Sanremo magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
That allure vibe.
I guess
that allure. Yeah.
If you can't be innovative,
be Italian.
You can try. You can be I was going to say timeless, but Italian works too. The land time forgot. Italy. I love Italy.
Va bene. Allora.
Allora. We should get a tie again. That'd be fun.
Mr. Neff.
There's so many points now. It would be very difficult, but it's going to happen at some point, probably.
I want to see how deep can we go into the tiebreaker system without it getting absolutely insane and ridiculous.
Well,
they've so many.
Yeah. I mean, the first tiebreaker is televote points.
Yeah.
So you would have to be tied in both votes to be tied for first.
Which I think by the fact that we have this rest of the world vote, that might be the thing that sways it.
You're welcome.
So what you're saying is we have all the power.
Look at the power.
Power podcast. All right. Anything else on Sweden that anyone wants to talk about?
It's still a lovely place. I enjoy going there quite much. Us taking the Swedish system down a peg doesn't mean that we're hating on Sweden. Like it's
well.
No, I mean,
not exactly. We hate because we love is the thing.
We're just disappointed.
Best pizza I've ever had outside of Italy was in Sweden. So given that, yeah, in Simrishamn on the southeast coast, we found a place that their pizza was unbelievable. I don't know. It's a town of like 500 people or something. It's probably more than that, but not. I don't know. It's a small town. They had really good pizza.
As
they could not hold
Eurovision
there.
Yeah. No.
I think the biggest venue is the Lutheran Church, if I had to guess.
Lutherans.
Oh, tell me about it.
I on the Swedish topic, though, I would love to see them. I'm hoping they don't get pushed into a position where they have to, but I would like to see them experiment a little bit more every now and again. I think there's plenty of good other kinds of music that they could be sending. They have the resources and the money to back a song that try something different, or maybe just different for them. I'd love to see it. I would love to see them. I would love to see a spectacular failure from them where they just really go for it, try something different, have it completely fail, and be like, you know what? We tried something different.
Respect.
I'd respect them a lot more for that.
Mom, no computer effect.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. But frankly, I actually personally preferred Lip Mom No Computer over Sweden this year. But
I love what the UK did.
Me too.
I really do. I understand why it didn't work. And I think even they knew like, oh yeah, this isn't going to actually help us in terms of success at the contest, but we're sending something different and cool. And that's awesome. And I'm glad they did.
Everyone's 11th favorite song.
Getting that vibe from Sweden would really be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good times. Good times. Yeah, you at home, let us know. What do you think about a hyper polished Eurovision song like from Sweden? Or I mean, there are many other countries that would probably do something similar. Is it too much? Is it too perfect? Is there such a thing as too perfect? Or are we just talking out of our butts like we, you know, normally do? Anyway, let us know at home. Find us on social media, 12pointsUSA, on basically everything. 12pointsofamerica@gmail.com is the easiest place to find us if you just want to reach out to us directly, or just find us on Patreon. You look like you were about to say something, Eric. So I didn't
want to talk out of my mouth, actually.
I guess I need weird. to make an I guess I need to make an appointment with my gastroenterologist. Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Podcast.
Anyway, until next episode, everybody. I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
I've been Eric.
And I've been Liz.
And America.
Stop listening now.
Approximately now.